Writing the teaching philosophy statement. Back in the 1980s, I was in teachers college, and we took a class on teaching philosophies. And what I remember, what little I remember from the 1980s, is that we talked about John Dewey and pragmatism in that class. My own educational journey just before teachers college was as a co-op English student working at Imperial Oil and IBM. To me, the concept of learning by doing explained a lot of what I found valuable in my education and my studies, and it is an example of something that's key to my own teaching philosophy, right, even to this day. My name is Roger Graves. I'm a professor in English and Film Studies and Writing Studies at the University of Alberta, Associate Director of the Center for Teaching and Learning, and Director of Writing Across the Curriculum. In today's podcast episode, I'm talking about writing teaching philosophy statements. How do we go about actually creating that document? What does it look like? What's included in it? In the podcast, I'm going to refer to some documents that you can find on the Center for Teaching and Learning website at the University of Alberta, ctl.ualberta.ca. And also, you can find those on my own website, wecanwrite.ca. I'll post information as well to LinkedIn and some other documents I'll make available through the We Can Write site. Now, this podcast episode is really a companion piece to one that I did with Cosette Lemelin, who's also at the University of Alberta in the Center for Teaching and Learning. And that one's called Developing Your Teaching Philosophy. Today's one is really about writing that teaching philosophy statement. On the CTL website at the University of Alberta, there's three teaching philosophy examples, teaching philosophy statement examples. I'll post links to those both on the CTL site, but also on the We Can Write site. So if you have a minute right now, you might want to take a look at those, because what I'm going to do is talk about when I look at those, here's what I found. So how are teaching philosophy statements structured? Here's some things I noticed. First, headings are optional. You can have them or not have them. It's really up to you. However, references in a way of footnotes or works cited, that kind of thing, those are required. Everyone has them. Point number two. They range between 4 to 7 pages, including references. Those are the ones on the website. I've noticed, however, for job applications, teaching philosophies tend to be 1 to 2 pages long. So you want to keep that context in mind. Number three, they are written in the first person. This is your teaching philosophy statement. Readers want to know what you think, what you do. Number four, the introduction situates your teaching within your institutional context. So, who you teach, that is to say, your students, your discipline and its methods or values, because there's quite a bit of variety from one to another, and your institution and its educational mission. I've taught at 5 different post-secondary institutions. They have quite a variety of institutional missions, and therefore, their teaching values change from one to another. The fifth point, you need to make a connection to your learning philosophy. So, how do students learn? It's not just about how you teach, but you need to connect that to how you think people learn, particularly how your students learn. And maybe you do that through your own example. I often talk about how I've learned to curl in the last few years. And the last point, you need to connect your teaching philosophy statement to your overall goals for education, generally speaking. So what do you think is important? What's education for? And then how is what you're doing connected to what you see as what it's all about? So when I read those examples, that's what I came up with. Here's some information from the University of Calgary. They have a document called Teaching Philosophies and Teaching Dossiers Guide. And in that, when they talk about a teaching philosophy statement, they say there's 4 sections to it. The first one is beliefs. What do you think? Number 2, strategies. What do you do? Number 3, impact. What is the effect on learners, yourself, and on colleagues of how you teach? And then finally, the 4th section, future goals. So where are you going with this? What are you thinking about? What's new for you? What are the new challenges you're going to take up? So if I could boil all that down to 1 or 2 things, I'd say the teaching philosophy statement asks you to explain why do you teach the way you do? And then that's a kind of a philosophy. A general answer to that question is a philosophy. And a more specific answer tends to lead you to talking about strategies and how you make that philosophy real in your classroom. So the first thing you want to do is identify what are the key things for you. Secondly, how do you operationalize them or make them real in your room? I guess Calgary is asking you to say, well, and then what are the outcomes of that? How does it work? How do you know it works? What's the impact of it? But everybody likes to know, so this is what you are now. And what interests you? What are you going to do going forward? What's new that's out there? To start writing your teaching philosophy statement, my philosophy is you need to develop it by writing about it. So ask yourself, which section can you make notes for most easily? It could be the introduction in which you situate your teaching within your institutional context. Just to remind us, that's who you teach, who are your students, your discipline and its methods or values, and your institution and its mission. The second section is the connection to your learning philosophy. So how do you think students learn? And then the third one is a connection to your overall goals for education more generally. When I think about my institution, the University of Alberta, and the students that I taught, they almost never were in the major program of study. They were never in writing studies. They're always students from some other discipline taking a writing course. That says all kinds of things about what's important to them, how important the course is, how it connects to other things they might have learned, and so on. Which, generally speaking, is you haven't taken another writing course, so whatever you're telling them is the only thing that they've heard. And so that means I've got to make different kinds of assumptions about what they already know coming into the room. If you're teaching in a major program or a graduate program, you'd be making different kinds of assumptions about what they know and about how they've been taught and about how they learn. University of Alberta students, for example, are drawn mostly from the city of Edmonton and its environment. So about 73% of students are from there. Another thing about the University of Alberta is that the 100 and 200 level classes, the average class size is 60 students. At the 300 and 400 level, the average class size is 30. When I taught in Illinois at DePaul University, we found out that our students there worked an average of 30 hours per week. I don't have any data on that for University of Alberta students, but I'm going to guess that since most of them are from the city of Edmonton or in that area, and probably most of them commute, that many of them are working as well, at least part-time during the week. Part of what I derive from that is just that students are often doing two things at once. They're students, of course, but they're also working. And so many of them are going to be thinking about what are the applications of what I'm learning? How do I connect what I'm learning to what I'm living? That's why I'm always thinking about how can I help them make that connection between what we're doing in class and how that might be useful in some other context. I created a Prezi called How We Learn, and I'll put the link to that on the We Can Write site as well as on the CTL site. And in that presentation, I talk about current research-based knowledge for post-secondary instructors. What are some books like Make It Stick, The Science of Successful Learning, and How Learning Works, Seven Research-Based Principles for Smart Teaching. So what are those books telling us about how students learn and then therefore how we can teach to take advantage of that? So, for example, in Make It Stick, the authors say, quote, "Rereading text and massed practice of a skill are among the least productive learning strategies." They also say that retrieval practices, that is to say, quizzes, is a more effective learning strategy than review by rereading. They also point out that students' motivation determines, directs, and sustains what they do to learn, so that you got to motivate them. And secondly, goal-directed practice coupled with targeted feedback enhances the quality of students' learning. In the Writing Studies 102 course that we developed, we really worked hard on peer feedback and getting them feedback that's specific to, say, a particular sentence or a particular paragraph that they were drafting. And in that way, we were trying to get that targeted feedback to them. So I'm just trying to give you an example here of how these are some of the things that are being talked about in current research books about teaching. And then how you might connect what you're reading there with things that you're already doing or things that you intend to start doing and rethinking the way that you have been teaching. One last tidbit from Making It Stick. If at first you don't succeed, you'll probably learn more. The authors say this: trying to solve a problem before being taught the solution leads to better learning. So there's a challenge there, and you've got to somehow overcome that challenge. I think part of the art of teaching is making sure that challenge is out there. It's a stretch for your learners, but it's not too far out there, and that there are some supports or ways to get to that learning goal. So just to rehearse here, when you're writing a teaching philosophy statement, the first chunk of it has to do with your beliefs about teaching and learning. How do you think people learn? What do you think is important in teaching? The next chunk has to do with the strategies. What kinds of things do you do? The third one either has to do with the impact or how well you think it's working. And the last one has to do with your future goals. I have to confess at this point, I'm on a phased retirement contract. I'm just about fully retired. I don't have any future teaching to do in the sense of classes. I've taught my last class, as it were. In spite of that, I did make an attempt at writing a teaching philosophy statement to sort of support these workshops. And you'll also find a link to that too on weekendwrite.ca. Thanks for listening, and I hope you found this useful.